Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
So true. Funny how it seems, always in time, but never in line for dreams. Head over heels, went toe to toe. This is the sound of my soul. This is the sound. I bought a ticket to the world, but now
Spandau Ballet.
Why do I find it hard to write the next line?
By the way, tomorrow's a Tuesday throwback to the 80s. We're going female tomorrow. Madonna will be your artist of the day tomorrow on a Tuesday throwback to the 80s. Welcome back. Dr. Dana Hawkinson will be joining us at 4:15 this afternoon from the University of Kansas Health System.
We have talked before on the program about the 20-item rule at the grocery store, and you know the kind of dance some of us do when you're looking in the cart.
21, but does that cheese stick really count?
Do they really count? If I have like several cans of Diet Coke, do I count each can? We've talked about that before. I don't know that we have ever talked about the changing room excess item rule. And sometimes when you go into a store to buy an article of clothing, you can take five or six things back. They give you the little plastic number that says 5 or 8. And some places have a rule, especially with COVID, that you can now only have, say, 4 items, which was the case this week when a woman was punched in the head and another kicked on the floor of the changing room after she was told she could only try on 4 items due to coronavirus restrictions.
Important.
3 women have been hospitalized following a fight in a changing room sparked by an excess of items. It happened Saturday afternoon. A woman walked into one of the fitting rooms in Spain. The 30-year-old was carrying 6 pieces of clothing instead of 4. When the saleswoman told her of the rule, the customer threw the garments into the employee's face. A 55-year-old customer tried to intervene, who was subsequently punched in the face by the first woman.
Oh, my.
She fell to the ground, where another shopper kicked her.
Oh, my word.
Before then attacking a 61-year-old who tried to restore the peace.
I'm telling you, man, coronavirus has made everybody lose their brains.
Pardon my ignorance here, but how is having less items in a changing room any more sanitary than having 2 additional items in a changing room?
Here is my understanding. There are certain stores that will tell you once you touch or try on an item, they then have to steam and sanitize that item. I don't know that all stores are doing that, but this looks like an upscale store, and I think if you touch it, the staff then has to sanitize it.
Are you going out shopping other than for groceries?
No.
I'm not either. Hell no. I'll go to Target and get some basketball shorts.
I didn't even know changing rooms were open. I don't think they are here.
Tell you what won't be open in the fall, schools.
Do not say that.
I'm just being honest.
You don't know.
Dana.
I would not say that after I just read a story about a brawl because it makes me want to punch you in your throat.
Well, I'm just being honest. There are stories all over the internets today. And it was on CNN and I saw it on Fox News as well. Okay, for those of you who think I don't scan the spectrum of political leanings in cable news. There's a lot of talk in light of everything that's going on. You heard about what happened in Lawrence. I told Sarah this morning, honest to God, Dana, I don't want to get heavy. I told Sarah this morning, if you are actually physically in a classroom come late August, I'll be shocked.
Breaking news from KMBC, Channel 9. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, in the last 3 minutes, has issued a statewide face mask mandate for indoor spaces. It begins at 12:01 a.m. July 3rd.
Why wait? July 3rd is Friday.
Kansas Governor Laura Kelly just issued a statewide face mask mandate for indoor spaces. It does not discern between public and private.
It's going to be hard to drink at the Hawk now, isn't it, Sarah?
Begins at 12:01 a.m. July 3rd.
You're still mad about this whole Sarah and the Hawk situation.
I'm annoyed because she was underage and she was at the Hawk. Yes.
Just stop.
What?
Just stop. What they're going to have to do with the bars, in my opinion,
is shut them down.
No. They need to shut down the street out in front of that triangle of bars and keep it an outdoor.
Are you talking about Bullwinkle's, the Wheel, and the Hawk?
Yes. And shut down that street.
You're going to shut down 14th and Tennessee, 14th and Ohio.
Yes. There's about 9 other arteries you can use to get through there. They need to shut it down, privatize that stretch, and let everybody be outside.
You are high as a kite.
I am
not social distance.
I am reasonable.
Do you think they're gonna? Yeah, I'm with Sam on that. Do you think they're gonna social distance in the street?
They're not gonna social distance in the dungeon basement that is the Bull.
What you need to do is you need to, here's the greatest invention I've ever come up with. You need to create a mask like this
with a straw hole.
With a hole? No. Not with a straw hole. With a built-in straw. Like a hole with a straw that goes right, like when you put your mask on, the straw goes right into your mouth, and then you go into the bar.
Yeah, until you run into a wall and it punctures the back of your throat.
No, your straw should be in a beer.
You can't have people walking around with projectiles sticking out of their mouth in a bar.
It's a 10-inch straw.
What's going to happen is you're going to lean in to ask a cute girl her name, and you're going to stab her in the eye with it, and then she's going to be blind. Like Ray Charles, for the rest of her life.
Well, she'd only be blind in one eye. He was blind in two eyes.
That is the dumbest idea I have ever heard in my life.
You know what's dumber? Is turning Tennessee, Ohio, and 14th Street into some sort of...
There's 9 other ways to get around right there. You just go down and one and over.
And who's going to monitor who's coming in? And you're going to... You think these kids are going to social distance?
Yes.
Well, I have a question. Who's going to be there to go to the bar when the school's not open?
Mm-hmm. No, you don't want these kids going back. You don't want these kids staying home is what you don't want.
No, I have absolutely enjoyed this summer. I really have, in ways that I did not even understand I would.
What if I said that was wrong? I'm just telling you what I think's going to happen.
I'm telling you there are ways to make this work. Now, probably not in the dead of January. We couldn't have people outside, but there are ways to make this work.
You truly are 17 going on 44.
No, I am not. You can't just shut the bars and restaurants down again, Scott.
They did in Texas. They did it today. You know why? Because 80 people went into a place called Harper's and they got infected with COVID in one night. One night. America, and especially America's younger people, are not taking this seriously. And that's a fact, Jack. Dr. Dana Hawkinson joins us next from the University of Kansas Health System. I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. It did not chart until 1993, but it was released in 1988. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. Dr. Dana Hawkinson joining us from the University of Kansas Health System. Now, do you see, Doctor, the things that you learn on this show that you would never learn anywhere else?
That's important knowledge.
It really is. Earth-shattering important knowledge.
You know a lot about medicine. I know a lot about music, and I have just told you something you did not know.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Doctor, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good.
So we just started right before break by announcing the breaking news, which was Governor Laura Kelly has just issued a statewide mask mandate in the state of Kansas, of course.
Starting July 3rd.
Starting July 3rd, 1201 July 3rd. And it does not discern between public and private places. It just says indoor spaces. Your thoughts about that?
I think that the mask mandate is going to be good. I think it's going to be very helpful. It will be difficult for a lot of people. It's going to be a culture change for sure. But I think overall, in as far as the public health domain goes, and then if you break it down to even individual and vulnerable population health, I think it's going to be a very positive thing. You know, we've seen it in other states. We know that on the population level in larger areas, countries, things of that nature, that it does improve the spread and mortality rates do improve because there is less virus spreading.
What numbers are we seeing here? And specifically tell us about the percentage jump and what that means.
Yeah, because Kansas on TV is like dark red now.
Yeah, I know that I don't have all the information. I know that in discussion with colleagues and overall testing around the area recently, especially over the weekend, that the percent of positives has certainly increased quite a bit. I think we went from originally like 2% to 4% to 5%. I think over the last several days or the weekend, in fact, you know, the numbers overall have increased almost up to 10% of patients who are tested positive. So even though there's more testing, the really scary thing is that the percentage of positive tests now is so much more than it was even when we were
testing. And real quick, Scott, can you kind of go over that again? Because people tend to say when we hear the numbers are growing, they shrug it off and they say, well, that's because we're testing more. Why is the percentage change different?
Why is the percentage change different? Well, that just means that the proportion of people that we're testing.
Correct.
So before, if we tested 100 patients and say that there were 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 patients that were positive, but now if we're testing 100 patients, now 10 of those people, 10% will be positive. So again, this is just a small snippet of what we have done the past, say, 24, 48 hours over the weekend, but that is a considerable jump from the normal percentage of positives, which we have been seeing really since the outset of this.
Dr. Hawkinson, it may be a little bit early to ask this question, but if you were advising the governor, and I don't believe that you are, but if you were, would you advise her to open schools in August or keep them closed?
You know, that is such a difficult question, and we try to address this. I mean, so what we do know, or hopefully we know, there is a little bit of evidence to suggest that younger people are less susceptible to the virus and maybe not as large amount of spreaders as we thought it, which is against dogma, of course, because we know that in daycares and schools, you know, respiratory diseases, other GI diseases spread pretty quickly. From the little bit of data that we have, the younger people may not spread the disease as much. Now, you have them in a room. We know that the teachers and the administration and other support staff are probably going to be in the older age groups more at risk. But, you know, school is so important for all these children for various reasons. It can be a safe place. It can be a place to get lunches. The other thing is, you know, a lot of younger people do need that harder direction to learn what they need to learn in school. And so that's a very difficult question. I think moving forward, as we just continue to see this really explosion or opening up of the virus, because we know it's out there. More and more people are known to be infected. In fact, more and more people are thought to be infected but have been asymptomatic, which, again, is a good thing because you're not having symptoms. You're not having to come to the hospital. I think that's a question that we need to continue to methodically evaluate, because I think being present in the school, in the building, with the direction of the teachers to really do the learning is going to be very important moving forward.
One of the things quickly Dr. Fauci said over the weekend is that it is unlikely any vaccine is going to be 100% protective. Even if everyone got it done, we're looking at somewhere around 97%, which is what the measles vaccine does. Mm-hmm. Where are we with the vaccination race?
Yeah, you know, I think we still are moving forward with clinical trials. Certainly agree with what Dr. Fauci said. And the fact is we may need one or two different vaccines. You know, a lot of these vaccines are just the spike protein. So it's just that little protein, that little spike that we see in all the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It's just directed towards that. Is that going to be enough to fully induce, full T-cell immunity as well as the antibodies? We certainly want antibodies. Or are we going to need some other vaccine, which also has other components as well? So there may need to be one or two different vaccines, and then getting a booster as well. Certainly we know that and anticipate, you will probably need that high level of a vaccination rate to really induce the herd immunity and really keep people as safe as possible.
Doctor, can you stick around?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to put you on hold. When we get back, can you take calls? Are you willing to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right, 576-7798-576-7798. When we do put you on hold during the news break, we're doing one hit wonders today. We're bringing you back with your favorite one hit wonder, okay?
Sounds good.
So think about it. Sam will be with you in just, he's like.
Really, why he went to medical school was to
weigh
in on that.
Spent 8 years in school and I get to pick one song on a stupid radio show. This will be fun. Okay, all right. 576-7798, Dr. Dana Hawkinson, when we get back.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52, lying awake intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through. They took the credit for your second symphony.
Those of you old enough to remember, this was the first video ever played on MTV. The Buggles. Video killed the radio star. And that comes from Dr. Hawkinson.
Good choice.
Are you happy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just fun to say the Buggles. But, you know, for us, it just was a start of a generation and really the first, not quite social media, but mass media. And it was the stepping stone for, you know, Michael Jackson, Madonna,
dude, are you
Bruce Springsteen.
Are you old enough to remember in 84 when Thriller came out? It was on a Monday. I think it was on a Monday at 5 o'clock. And like, and every kid our age just like gathered in front of the TV just waiting.
Yeah, it was like a movie production.
Yeah.
We're old. I have more vaccine questions,
okay.
Scott.
I want to talk more about
videos. You digress. Can you talk about the, first of all, the lightning speed with which companies around the world are rushing to figure out the vaccine, number one.
Yep.
And then number two, once they figure it out, do we have even the capacity to mass produce this thing the way it will need to be mass produced?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good questions. You know, we do have so many resources, so many dollars all over the world, that are going into different companies and different research to really develop the vaccine. Some of the vaccines, some of the companies are using things they had originally purposed for the original SARS infection, the MERS infection. So there's some basis of that technology and what they're doing. And so hopefully as we move forward, things are going to be moving certainly at a quicker pace than any other vaccine. So we really need to make sure that it's safe. And so far, the preliminary data from some of these do show that it is safe, and safety is the biggest thing. We know that then going to the second question, certainly for all vaccines, we know that there can be manufacturing problems, and we've had even that problem without COVID. We've had some vaccines that are short. We know that getting the vaccines out to the right populations for one reason or another is going to be difficult. So, you know, certainly Dr. Fauci has talked about how the U.S. government is pairing with some of these companies that they seem to be a little bit more promising so that they can already start ramping up the vaccine production so that we can have multi-million doses to get to the people, not only in our country, but in other countries around the world. And so, you know, there are people who are looking at that, and we are trying to mass produce vaccines right now, hoping that they will be efficacious and safe. And if they are, we will have some amount, some stockpile to start going out and vaccinating the population.
Doctor, nobody's ever accused me of being the smartest cat in the litter, but it's my understanding, like, for example, with your basic annual flu vaccine, you get a small dose of the actual flu virus, and your body creates antibodies, which makes you, for the most part, unlikely to get the flu that season. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, hang on. There's a larger question here. Why can't we just create a vaccine that has a small part of the coronavirus or COVID-19? Or are there other things that go into a vaccine that make it work or don't work?
Yeah, absolutely. There are all of those components. So that flu vaccine that you're talking about is an inactivated virus. But it's inactivated, so it doesn't give you the flu. We've established that. We want to make sure that we are able to induce the immunity that we need to induce. And inducing T cells, which is another subset of your immune system, as well as the antibody production, is extremely important. But not all the time are we able to get that immune system to activate if it does see the virus or components of the virus. So it's very important to, number one, if you're not using the whole virus, to pick the components that your immune system is going to react to and develop an immune response to. Again, not only antibodies, but we want the other part of the immune system, the cellular immune system as well. And so, again, we've had other virus infections. RSV is a well-known old viral infection. We still haven't been able to develop a vaccine against that. You know, polio took 50 years from discovering the virus to creating a vaccine. And so there are a lot of other details that go into creating a vaccine in a safe manner, which we can give it to humans, and it can develop an immune response to.
Let's go to Tiffany in Parkville. Tiffany, good afternoon. Oh, God dang it.
Go to Marie. It's okay. Go to Marie.
No,
she's got
I hung
a good
up
question.
On the doctor. I just hung up on the doctor.
Oh, no.
Yes, I hit the right side. Tiffany, I meant to hit the left side.
So, Tiffany, you could ask us the question, and we have no answer for you.
So, Tiffany.
And that's
God
absolutely fine.
Dang it.
You guys, I listen to you all the time.
I hit the wrong side. I meant to hit the left side,
you
and I hit the right.
You just dumped Dana Hawkinson?
He is super important, so I don't know.
Mr. Hawkinson, please call back.
He's got
Dr. Hawkinson.
He's got paging Dr. Hawkinson. Paging Dr. Hawkinson.
Oh, no. I'm so embarrassed.
Scott hung up on you. He didn't
honestly,
mean it.
You guys can answer my question so you get
hang on. Time. He's calling back in. I'm putting you on hold. Okay. I'm going to move you over to the left side. Hang
don't
on.
Touch anything. It's like an elevator
doctor,
button.
I'm so sorry.
Hi.
What I did, inside baseball, you're on the right side of the screen, and I went to Tiffany, and I hit the right side of the screen, which knocks you out. I'm going to go to the left side of the screen and bring in Tiffany in Parkville. You're on with the good Dr. Hawkins.
That was a buggle.
it was a total buggle.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
Beautiful. I was just curious. I just got in on this, listening to you saying that, yes, it is important for students to return to school. And I totally believe that. As a teacher, I've been teaching last quarter totally from distance. And I know how it's affected their grades. And anyway, my question is, though, summer school starts on Wednesday. Do you feel that we are going to be okay starting on Wednesday summer school? Everyone keeps talking about going back in August, but a lot of us are having summer school. Mm. So that's why I was curious if you thought, gosh, at least we should wait till August, or it doesn't matter either way. It's going to be the same.
Yeah. You know, that's a tough situation. I think it really depends on the space where you're teaching, how many people are in that room, can you adequately safely distance from each other, even more than 6 feet, say 8 to 10 feet. That's going to be important. How long are you going to be in the classroom for summer school? That's a very difficult question to answer. I would certainly advise, if you can do that, face masks are probably going to be very appropriate. I know it's difficult for especially younger students to maintain a face mask and not manipulate it and touch it on a regular basis. Also, adequate hand hygiene. Those are things that you have to consider to really reduce the risk as much as possible. Certainly, Zoom or distance learning is probably going to be the lowest risk, but then taking into account all those other things on the physical site where you're at. And I think that is going to be something that has to be determined by the administrators. It's really difficult other than trying to reduce the risk as much as possible and assessing the risk in that area where you are at.
Doctor, let me ask this question on behalf of Dana and my brother, who both have graduating high school seniors, both going to KU.
Mm-hmm.
I have an entering freshman in college.
Yeah.
Would you send them to school, and would you have them move into a dormitory?
Yeah, right now we know that there are a lot of colleges who are making plans to safely re-enter into the college life as far as schools, dorms, fraternities, and even athletics. And I know that the health system here is working with the University of Kansas and some other institutions as well. The information, the data, and the plan that we have right now may not be the plan in 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, and that's really difficult. I know a lot of institutions are going to be having testing before going to school, 1 or 2 days before arriving on campus and moving into the dorms. Certainly you can do that. It's really going to be dangerous, though, as people, and especially that age group, are going to want to be out and be social and be with people and in large gatherings such as bars, other parties, things of that nature. So once that happens, you can understand and see how it would be easy for that whole system to break down, as you would have very high risk of further spread throughout those types of things. And I think, it's a little bit too early to say. I know that, again, that a lot of the institutions are trying to make the best plan moving forward to keep everybody safe, including the students, including the professors, and everybody else who may be on campus, to really try to reduce the spread on campus, whether that's cohorting to a certain building if you are positive, doing contact tracing, having the ability to test locally in the city or in the town where the university is at. All of those things are coming into play and really trying to figure out the best way to go about restarting classes and getting people and reopening back up campus.
Doctor, we keep reading that so many more people have had this or have this than anyone ever imagined, that there are just so many people who have been infected and who are asymptomatic. Remind everyone, what is herd immunity and when do we get there? If it is in fact true that so many people have had it, then you shouldn't really worry about sending your kid, off to college if they have had it. Is that true?
That's several different questions there. So for herd immunity, typically for infections, we would typically say 80 or more like 90% of the population needs to be either had the infection and survived or vaccinated. In some instances, people have talked about for COVID-19, you need at least 60 or 70%, but even that still leads to 34 or 40% who are susceptible. The other thing is with immunity, we would assume that after getting this infection, you would be immune at least for, say, 3, 6, 9 months down the road. We don't know exactly how long any immunity will last, and if you've had it in the past, if you get re-exposed to it, are you going to be fully fine? Or are you going to have mild symptoms? Are you still going to be able to spread the virus to others who are susceptible? All those questions we don't know the answer to. And to your first point about, maybe there's been 20 million, not 2.5 million, who have been infected. On the one hand, that's good because that goes back to what we've always said, and that 85% or more people who've had the infection will not even need to seek hospital care or further medical management, which is a very good thing. But if that small percentage that has to go to the hospital and that small percentage that has to go into the ICU that gets critically ill, that is really the concerning thing. So if you're having large numbers of people infected, even those small percentages of people that need ICU care is going to be a very high number. And we are still trying to learn that. That's been some new data and information that we've just learned. But again, I think overall, that is good, and that says that a lot of people have had exposure to this or had the infection but haven't needed to seek hospital care. And as we get further and further into this, more people will be infected. Hopefully, those people will have immunity, and we do get closer to herd immunity until we have a vaccination or other adequate therapies available.
Doctor, can you hang around for just a second?
Yep.
All right, when we get back, I want to ask you, what did Europe get right that we did not?
All right.
Okay. Dr. Dana Hawkinson with the University of Kansas Health System joining us on the KMBZ Hotline. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. I am Scott Parks on KMBZ. All right, let's get back to it. We don't have time to waste. The clock, it is a ticking. Dr. Dana Hawkinson with the University of Kansas Health System. Always generous with your time, and we do appreciate it, my friend. Thank you for it. What did Europe get right that we did not? Their numbers have gone down and stayed down. Ours are ticking up. There's no denying it. Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, which completely debunks the theory that in warm weather, this virus will die.
Yeah, actually, that's a real good point. There was a concern, you know, is the weather going to matter? Is the heat? And it shows it hasn't. I think, you know, what has Europe done right? Europe, especially Italy and Spain, were really put behind the eight ball initially, too. They had a lot, large surges of infections, large surges of death. But as you move forward, you know, those countries are smaller, so there are differences in the country. They're geographically smaller. They don't have as large a population. You know, some of them, such as Sweden, did not institute the same sort of measures as other countries in Europe. I think if we look at more of Asia, such as South Korea and Japan, they were better able to really focus on contact tracing, identify cases, identify where the contacts were, who was affected, and they had a large amount and high volume testing early on, and they were really able to control the infection, control the hospitalizations and the deaths in those countries. And, you know, as we move further, Alex Azar said, you know, we may be not able to contain it anymore. How best can we further contain this infection, and what can we do to contain it? Is it contact tracing? Is it more testing? I think it's a combination of all those, but also the individual responsibility, really, of, you know, the mask culture and the hand sanitizing and physical separation and physical distancing, and all of those things combined are really is going to lead to us really being able to get control of this infection.
Doctor, one of the things you said is that we don't know how long right now your immunity will last. If you've already had coronavirus, we just don't know yet how long that immunity will last. What do we know about SARS and other coronaviruses as far as their immunity timeline? And does that give us any clue as to what we might see with coronavirus?
So for SARS and MERS, we know that your body makes antibodies to those coronaviruses, and they can last for 2 to 3 years. But after that, they subsequently drop off pretty quickly. So you do have some circulating antibodies, but we don't know that if you get really re-exposed, you know, you should still have the cells that are available in your body that once you see that infection again should be able to reproduce those antibodies and start an immune function. So the best evidence that we have is through those studies showing that you do tend to have antibodies for at least 2 to 3 years. After that, they drop off significantly, but you should still have a reaction after re-exposure where those cells, those immune system cells, can recreate antibodies.
And is that because your body recognizes it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, your body will recognize it because it's already seen it once. So that should be very helpful. But it should also be noted that for the common cough and cold coronaviruses, of which there are four, that other experiments, such as in New York City, a published experiment, did show that even people who are reinfected with the same coronavirus, say 9 months later, will still get some symptoms. So it's really hard to determine how is it compared to that versus the SARS and MERS that we know you have some antibodies to for a couple years, but then they drop off. What exactly is that immunity going to lend you? Will you just have mild symptoms or will you have no symptoms? We just don't know at this point.
Hey, doctor, we have 30 seconds, so I'm going to try to ask this question as quickly as I can, if you could answer it as quickly as you can. You said something to the effect of 80% of people infected with coronavirus, COVID-19, do not require hospitalization. That doesn't mean they're asymptomatic. Maybe they show symptoms, but they don't require hospitalization. Do you think that plays into the part of people acting like this is no big deal, go to the beach, go to the bar, whatever?
I think that's part of it. You know, we've always wanted, from day one, from our, the experiences we've read about, 80 to 85% of people will not need to seek any medical attention. So stay home, stay quarantined away or isolated away from other people so you don't spread it. But I think, to your point, that could very well be true. Or they could have symptoms and not really know it. They may not be the cough and the shortness of breath and the fever that we have typically seen, but some of the other atypical symptoms that they may or may not think is truly COVID infection. So I think that's certainly a part that is playing in this as well. And the other one is the people with no symptoms whatsoever. And we're finding a larger proportion than originally thought of people who don't have any symptoms.
Hey, doctor, always good to hear your voice. Be well, be safe, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you, doctor.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Dana Hawkinson with the University of Kansas Health System. News is next.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.